My name is Robert Forrester, Chief Executive of Vertu Motors PLC, and welcome to our presentation of our interims for the six-month period to the end of August 2021. I'm joined this morning by Karen Anderson, our Chief Financial Officer, and I'm gonna cover the highlights. Karen's gonna go into more detail with regards to the financial performance, and then I'll come and cover strategy, current trading and outlook. Let's start off with an at a glance of what we've achieved over 15 years. On the 1st of November, it's the 15-year anniversary of incorporating Vertu Motors, and we've used AIM throughout the history of the company to grow a very scaled business and one of the sector leaders now in the industry. We are in a very strong position. You can see that revenues have grown in the six months to 1.9 billion, despite the reduced vehicle sales. We have a very strong conservative balance sheet. 0.615 net tangible assets per share is a much increased number and just shows the bedrock of in terms of the balance sheet that we've got. We've now got a group of 154 outlets with the widest range of manufacturer representation of any group in the United Kingdom, and built on a very solid basis of high customer satisfaction levels. You can see Net Promoter Score in used cars, 85%, and 84% of colleagues saying that Vertu Motors is a great place to work. We have a really strong platform with which to continue. If we look at the highlights for the period, we've had a period of significant sector tailwinds where I believe we've delivered operational excellence. We've got four areas we'd like to draw attention to. The first is the digitalization technological innovation piece, where we've done a lot of work with our in-house development team driving innovation. Our Click to Drive brand, which we outlined to our shareholders when we did our final results, is coming on apace. The technology platform that drives our sales online and offline is improving considerably. We are about to launch in October a three-month TV campaign where we'll be communicating to our customers for the first time what Click to Drive is and how it fits in with Bristol Street Motors, and it's about showing that we can do full online and full omni-channel retailing, putting the customer in control of how they want to interact with us to buy a car. We'll also be launching, as part of the Click to Drive initiative, for the first time, a concierge service. If somebody is struggling with online retailing, lacks a bit of confidence, they'll have a personal shopper in Gateshead who can find videos of the car they want, interact with the dealership, answer any questions, and actually guide them through the online sales process. We've also undertaken a lot of development with regard to use of data in decision-making. We've now got a fully operational used car vehicle valuation methodology for online part exchange valuation, and also to power Sell My Car, which was an initiative on our website, so we could purchase vehicles directly from the public, irrespective of whether they were gonna buy a car from us, and that certainly helped us in a period of constrained supply. We've developed our portfolio, both of brands, franchises, and properties. We continue to invest in our core brands to generate heightened awareness. We've multi-franchised more of our portfolio to give us greater operational profitability from each of our rooftops. We've taken a new franchise on. We've now got MG, which is a very electric vehicle-focused franchise, and we've now got that in Carlisle, and this week opened in Beaconsfield. We've also given our investors an insight into how much firepower we have. We would envisage that over the next few years we'll be investing again in acquisitions, and we believe we've got on reasonably conservative assumptions about 90 million pounds of firepower. Which brings us on really to capital allocation, which is a key consideration for the board. We've generated significant cash in the period. We have a very strong net cash position, and that's given the board confidence to reestablish the dividend in January and to recommence the share buyback program, which we'll go into more detail on later. The fourth pillar, which is absolutely crucial to achieving all our goals in terms of operational excellence and execution, is making sure we've got the right colleagues, the right number of colleagues, and that they're appropriately trained. We have had very strong satisfaction levels in colleague surveys of late, and I think that reflects the support that we gave to colleagues during the pandemic. Clearly the labor market has changed, and we are undertaking a full review of pay across the group, which will be effective at least by the end of this calendar year. And the combination of expected pay augmentation and new apprentice programs, which are very significant, we expect that to have an annualized investment cost of around 12 million. So if you look at the financial KPIs presented on this slide, you can see we've generated record profits and substantial cash generation, clearly aided by significant tailwinds in the industry. The supply constraints in new vehicles, which are fed into supply constraints into used vehicles, have augmented margins considerably to almost record levels. And despite lower sales volumes, the group has generated a record profit of 51.1 million profit before tax. The excellent cash levels is exhibited in the fact that we no longer use used car vehicle stocking loans, actually for the first time in 15 years. And the significant free cash flow, 63.6 million, just shows the cash generating capacity that our business actually has. The strong foundation is there. Tangible net assets per share of 61.5, I think, will surprise many that it's grown so significantly over the period. I'm now going to pass to Karen, who's going to go through the detail of the financial results.
Thank you, Robert. So on slide seven, we've set the income statement out and actually compared it to each of the last two financial year periods, with percentage movements shown against the pre-pandemic period of the 31st of August, 2019, that six-month period ending then. And that's because of the significant impact the lockdown had on the results to the 6 months to August, 2020. Revenue growth of 16.8% was achieved against the pre-pandemic period, with 80% of this uplift related to acquisitions and the balance due to rising vehicle values. Margins were strong at 11.6% as the group maintained good pricing disciplines in the light of the market conditions. 5.6 million of government support was received in the period, with the vast majority of this, 5.2 million, relating to business rates relief on retail premises. Amounts claimed under the coronavirus job retention scheme were just 400,000 in the period, and no amounts have been claimed under this scheme since the end of April. A £21.7 million growth in operating expenses is apparent, excluding that government support. 90% of this growth is due to the impact of acquisitions. Growth in the core group actually included a £3 million investment in a TV brand marketing campaign and increased variable pay, such as commission and bonuses, of about £4 million as a result of the strong trading performance. The impact of these costs together was partially offset by the impact of cost savings, such as the £10 million headcount saving, which we delivered in FY21. Reduced finance charges were seen in the period, and that's due to the reduction in the pipeline in terms of funded new vehicle consignment inventory, driven by well-documented supply constraints, as well as a reduced level of borrowings by the group. The underlying effective tax rate shown on this slide excludes a £2.9 million charge on the revaluation of deferred tax obligations to the new corporation tax rate for the future of 25%, up from 19%. And dividends have been re-established, as you can see on this slide. The profit bridge is set out on slide eight. As with the previous slide on profit and loss, this compares to H1 financial year 2020, namely the pre-pandemic period. New vehicle gross profits in the core group grow by £0.7 million. And this is despite new retail sales and Motability sales volumes declining. The growth in gross profit in this channel is therefore entirely due to improved margin retention, with a 20% rise in gross profit per unit being achieved by the group. Fleet and commercial sales also were impacted as a result of supply dynamics. Manufacturers diverted what supply and production they had into higher margin retail channels. Whilst this meant that the group saw reduced volumes of new and fleet and commercial sales volumes, we saw a significant uplift again in gross profit per unit earned in this channel, which drove the overall positive result in gross profit generation. Clearly, the most significant increase in core group gross profit arises in the area of used cars, Volumes were level in the core group in used cars, and the group maintained pricing disciplines in the light of the market conditions in used cars, which led to significantly higher retention of margins. Gross margin in this channel were 10.6% in the period, up from 8.1%, and this is what's driving this positive performance. In aftersales too, augmented margins were the cause of the uplift in gross profit. Service hours sold actually declined as the lockdown in April and May 2020 reduced the number of vehicles sold coming back for service the next year and disrupted service anniversaries for those vehicles already in the park. The group's aftersales processes helped drive improved average invoice values, which offset the reduction in hours and drove improved margins in service. Parts revenues were also stable, despite some franchises moving to an agency model. We managed to capture market share in those other franchises we held. Improved margins were also seen in this channel, both as a result of agency and as a result of our actions. I have discussed operating expenses, interest, and government support when I talked about the profit and loss account. But one last thing on this slide is the significant contribution from acquisitions, which saw a 3 million pound uplift in operating profit in the period. And this is certainly significantly ahead of our expectations at the time of acquisition. By way of example, the BMW acquisition of 12 outlets completed in December 2020. This business generated a loss before tax of 6 million pounds in the year immediately prior to our purchase. We implemented our acquisition plan, including the appointment of a management team with BMW experience. Nevertheless, our expectation was this business would lose money this financial year, break even next year, and contribute thereafter. This business actually generated a profit before tax contribution of over 2 million pounds in the period, significantly in excess of our expectations. Turning over to the cash flow on slide nine, the group was very successful in converting the high level of profit into cash with a conversion of 116%. This performance was aided by an inflow from working capital of 15.8 million, but there are some significant moving parts within this working capital movement. New vehicle supply constraints meant the group held 18.1 million less new fully paid inventory and 6.5 million less trade receivables at the period end. The group, in contrast, was successful in securing supplies of used vehicle inventory, and this, together with higher prices, led to an absorption of 13.1 million of working capital in respect of used cars. Again, in working capital, demonstrator stocking requirements, which had been relaxed during the restrictions, were normalized, and this saw an absorption of 8 million pounds in the period. Finally, within the 15.8 is a movement in trade payables of 12.3 million, which represents an increase. And this was increased customer deposits as lead times, particularly on new cars, extended out, an increase in warranty and service plan funds held by the group, and a growth in VAT. If I turn over to slide 10, this should be a familiar slide for many who've been to these presentations in the past. And this sets out the capital allocation disciplines of the group. The strength of the balance sheet is demonstrated by the strong tangible net assets per share figure of 61.5 pence per share. If we apply prudent EBITDA multiples to the numbers, that we get an implied debt firepower figure of at least 90 million pounds available for growth. However, the allocation of capital to acquisitions will only be made if we achieve expected hurdle rates in terms of EV/EBITDA ratios. The current positive market conditions in the sector, driving high levels of profitability, may mean some potential acquisitions are too expensive in the short term, and we will not execute these. Share buybacks have long been a use of excess free cash flow by the group, where shares are trading below intrinsic value. The group has repurchased 7.5% of its issued share capital since 2017, and the current repurchase program will recommence now that the group is out of close period. The group targets a dividend cover of 3 to 4 times sustainable EPS. But remember, the extraordinary level of profit declared in the first half has resulted in a higher level of cover being applied for the interim dividend. If I turn to slide 11, we set out the balance sheet and its strength underpinned by its freehold and long leasehold portfolio. The group's defined benefit pension scheme remains in surplus, with the scheme requiring no cash contributions from the group. Current assets saw a significant decline in the period, largely due to the supply constraints in new cars. These reduced the level of funded consignment inventory considerably in the period, along with the reduction in the associated creditor. In contrast, the group was successful in its management of used inventory levels, which have grown not only as a result of rising prices, but by the active management of the group to ensure a good supply of stock in volume terms. I'll now hand back to Robert so he can give an update on the strategic progress of the group.
Thank you, Karen. I'll now go through where I think the group is in terms of its strategy and the execution of its strategy. The slide presented here is very similar to that presented in recent results. There's good reason for that, because the group's strategy remains very consistent. However, in September, the full board, including non-executives, had a full day reviewing the strategy and assessing where we were in the light of clearly changing realities. And we have made some amendments to the strategy slide, which the eagle eye will spot. The first element of our strategy remains, which is to aim for scaled growth. We are ambitious to grow earnings by deploying capital in the growth of new dealership operations. And clearly, we'd like to build scale with the major OEM partners who will thrive over the next decade. And there's clearly judgments to be made there. The second element is digitalization and having a cohesive bricks and clicks strategy, which we are a long way through developing. We've clearly got the click to drive technology in our sales department, which is going to bring together not only the online omni-channel web elements of sales, but we're going to make sure that the dealership experience mirrors it. A good example would be around making sure it's the same used car valuation that's in place online and in the dealerships and locking that down using algorithms. We've got a very good roadmap to bring the dealership experience and the online experience together. We're now very focused on digitalization developments in after sales to enhance the customer experience and to make that as effortless as possible. And we've got some very good ideas we're working on in that area. And we're also continuing to roll out robotics and technology to increase efficiency and crucially to increase the use of data to make the right decisions at all levels of the business. The third element is focus on colleagues and customers. Colleagues obviously drive the customer experience, and a number of things in this presentation stem from that in terms of management actions to make sure that that pillar is delivered. The fourth pillar, which we don't talk about that much, but is increasingly important in terms of profit delivery for the group, are the ancillary businesses. Tend to be digital businesses that give synergies to the core group, but are not dealerships. And there's a significant focus on growing that arm to help the group overall. And indeed, we acquired a website called powerbulbs.co.uk, which we've integrated into Ace Parts and increases our online parts retailing business. So in terms of trying to explain the sector, tailwinds and performance, and clearly very significant increases in profitability, you've really got to go back and look at the new vehicle market and what's happened there. And Karen has covered a lot of the dynamics, but I think it's worth trying to put it into overall context. The new car supply situation has clearly been challenging for a number of reasons. General supply chain woes across the globe, specific impact of COVID on factory capacity and production as workers were not available. And then on top of this, a significant shortage of semiconductors. You can clearly see that the forecast new car market is 21.8% lower than the decade average, clearly significant. And let's bear in mind that 2020, with all the lockdowns, was also significantly down. We've had quite a long period of reduced new car supply. If you look at the six-month period and our like-for-like new car volumes, you can see we were down 13.8% and we split it by channel. And you will see that the channels that actually were protected more than others by the manufacturers were commercial vans. And clearly that has been a very buoyant element of the market, and the manufacturers and ourselves make very good margins on that. So that's been protected to a high degree. And fleet has been the variable that the manufacturers have sought to reduce the most, and that's their lowest profitable channel. So we've seen a mix change. That mix change benefits not only the manufacturers, but benefits ourselves in terms of we make higher margin on retail and indeed commercial vehicles. So there's the new car piece. We have had better margins. It's more than just offset the volume shortages. But the real big impact of the new car challenges is actually on used cars, because this is a system that operates as one. And there is a direct flow through from new car supply constraints into used car wholesale markets. If we sell less new cars, we take in less part exchanges to feed our used car business. If fleets can't change their fleet and defleet and then send cars to the auction, or we buy them direct from the fleets, then clearly the wholesale markets and used cars tighten up. And that is exactly what we have seen. So because of supply constraints, we've applied very strong pricing disciplines, both in new and in used cars. But the real impact has been actually in used cars. We normally expect in normal markets used cars to decline by around 5% over a six-month period. Certainly RH1 would normally be about 5%. We've actually seen the average car go up in value by over 20%. And when we're sat on inventories of well in excess of 100 million, that has a massive impact. We're sat on an appreciating asset. And the strong pricing disciplines have given us extra margin, as you can see on that quite spectacular profit bridge. So our gross profit per unit in used cars has gone from just over £1,200 a unit to £1,657. Highest margin that we have seen in terms of pound notes, at least in the history of the company. And people use words like unprecedented and exceptional, and I think that's right, but let's not think this is going to disappear overnight. These supply issues aren't going to go away. We've got the immediate issue that the semiconductors aren't going to free up new vehicle supply anytime soon. But in addition to that, the cars that have not been made are never going to be made, which means that we've got a 2 to 3 year period of constrained used vehicle supply. And we've done an analysis of our gross margin over time. And you look back to scrappage, which sucked a lot of used cars out of the system and a relatively weak new car market before that in the global financial crisis. And it took around 3 to 4 years for used vehicle margins to actually get back to normal. Now, clearly demand has an impact on that, so I'm not making a prediction there. Though we can certainly see strong margins for the next 6 months, I would say. We shouldn't forget with this fixation on sales that we actually have a very strong, resilient after-sales business. Now, an after-sales business that as a percentage of the whole gross profit has actually made the least contribution for years, but that's not because it's been weak. It's because vehicle margins have been so strong. It is actually the linchpin of franchise retailer profitability, and we shouldn't forget that. And there's a lot of things happened in our after-sales business which have been good in the period. We've got a real grip of process around identifying additional work and selling it. Our average invoice value has gone from £244 to £278. And that's an environment during lockdowns where customers have actually used their car less. So wear and tear is down. So I think we've done a good job there. The Ace Parts online parts business has clearly benefited from the growth in online retailing, continues to grow in terms of profitability. And we're taking a real good look at the digitalization of the after sales process. You can see here, we've certainly done a good job on online service bookings, which are highly more efficient to us than having to make outbound calls or taking inbound calls. And we've increased online service bookings over 2 years from 13,000 to nearly 37,000. So a fantastic result, and with more to come, we will see online service bookings increase. Part of the reason why that's been so successful is, and we mentioned this 6 months ago, is that we have put quite a significant budget around digital conquest marketing for after sales to bring in new customers where we never actually sold the car in the first place. And we've had 10,000 bookings plus actually in the period, and they've all gone through the online service booking channel. So we're very pleased with that, bringing new customers and growing our revenues. We don't often talk much about parts and accident repair centres, but I think there's worth a mention here. We have set up a new contact centre in Gateshead, which takes the phone calls from all our dealerships that don't have dedicated trade centre hubs. So all the retail customers wanting parts now phone into Gateshead. We take the order and they go to the dealership to pick it up. And that certainly led to a much better customer experience for the customers. But we've actually captured a far higher proportion of their business, and we've grown revenues by £300,000 per month. And that's rising as more and more dealerships come into that book. Finally, accident repair centres. We actually have 11 accident repair centres. We've now put them into a new company with dedicated management in body shops that are driving much better levels of operational excellence and focus. We're having real move forwards in terms of profitability. And actually, given the fact that the largest player in the sector fell over last year, Nationwide Accident Repair Centre, we think that supply-demand dynamics in that business is much better now in a market perspective. So we would envisage maybe having more accident repair centres as we go forward. So if we turn now to digitalisation of sales, there's quite a lot to discuss here. You've seen a slide similar to this before. There was a range of activity undertaken by customers. There is no one customer now in terms of how the market behaves. Some people want to transact entirely online. Some people want to just come into a dealership and have a traditional process. And in the middle, there are those who want to do more online than less or less online. Now, we think we've got a strategy really to move our business forward in this area. And we would like to make it absolutely interchangeable and transparent between online and offline. So if you get a valuation of a used car online, then the dealership has the same value. You come into the dealership, you get the same value for the used car as if you're online. And we're well through making that a reality. In addition, we have got a lot of very good initiatives under the Click to Drive banner to actually push the message to customers that we are omnichannel retailing and we can increase our penetration of that market. However, let's put things into perspective. Of 50,000 used cars that we sold in H1, 681 were pure e-commerce. And actually, this is due to conversion. So our normal dealership operations have a conversion ratio of inquiries to sale of around 30%. In online pure used car retailing, the average conversion ratio is 0.8 of 1%, which explains why pure online retailers have to fund millions and millions of pounds of marketing in order to get any volume at all when you put a 0.8% conversion ratio. It is a minority score. What we're going to do to increase that conversion ratio, because it is an efficient channel, our dealerships have to do less work clearly on an online purchase, is we are putting personal shopping concierge people in the mix to help the people who are online. We can spot them online. We can then ask them, have they got any concerns? They can ask questions. We can provide them with videos. We can change the deal for them. We can even take over the screen. That is going to be launched later this month. And we will be driving customer awareness of that through the TV campaign of Click to Drive. Click to Drive is far more than e-com. It is actually the whole technology platform which allows customers to choose how they interact with us. But we're very confident and have seen evidence in the US that concierge services can significantly increase conversion of that channel of pure e-com. Now, the other element of clearly we've seen is as the world has reopened, as dealerships reopened, a good 30 to 35% of customers actually just want to go into a dealership, transact as normally, and the vast bulk of customers actually have a test drive. And it is quite clear that that's increased and reversed the trend when we were locked down where no one could test drive. So we've got to cater for all these customers. However, it's probably worth pointing out that the vast majority of customers do interact with us online at some point, be it the initial inquiry or a personalized video or even over the phone to actually finalize the deal. And we've got very good technology to make that as seamless as possible. So if you actually look what Vertu offers in the wider sector, if you include the independent used car operators and web pure e-com operators, we think we are very well positioned to fight our corner, both against the established players and disruptors. Our customer experience in used cars is sector leading at an NPS of 85%. We're very, very proud of that. It means that customers are getting what they actually want to get. We've got a strategy that's bricks and clicks. We cater for pure e-com, but frankly, the vast majority of people want to have test drives. I much prefer to operate at a high conversion ratio well in excess of 0.8%. And I think that the online disruptors have a real problem if they continue to try and push everybody down an e-com, no test drive route, they're not going to get the volume. Now, actually, we've seen Cazoo establish a physical footprint across the UK, but still not offering test drives. You can't go and actually see the car really before you buy it. I think they'll have to change that personally. It makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. The other factor that's very much in our favour here is because we are franchise retailers, we are able to purchase new vehicles and used vehicles from manufacturers. And we've been talking for a number of years that the objective of the manufacturers is very clear. They want to control not only the sale of the new car, they want to control the used car sale and the subsequent used car sale by keeping everything in a closed loop. So supplying only franchise retailers, not supplying independents. And I think they've made good progress with that. But also if they sell to a fleet, to do a buyback so they can bring it back into the franchise network. Now, they want to do that to make sure the franchise networks are viable and profitable, but also because as franchise dealers, when we prepare the car and if we sell the car and then we sell a service plan, we're retaining those older cars in our network and buying parts from the manufacturer. So this is really core strategy of OEMs to create a closed loop. And frankly, I think people outside of that loop, i.e. non-franchised used car retailers, are going to struggle with supply for quite a while. And the proof is in the eating. If you look at this slide, we have over 8,000 cars for retail sale, used cars on our web at the moment, and major competitors like Cazoo, Motorpoint, approximately 3,000, Cinch, about 5,000. So I think the proof is in the eating. The other cornerstone of our strategy as franchise retailers is we provide a full service. Because of our high margin after sales business in every location, we are there when something goes wrong. I think customers want that. And we have a far deeper relationship than a pure e-com model. And when you factor in the connected car technology that the global brands are developing, and customers increasingly have an app with the manufacturer, it ties the customer into the manufacturer, but also their local retailer. And I think this is really important. We are going to see higher retention and a deeper customer relationship on the back of the customer's relationship with the OEM and the OEM's relationship with the retailer. I think connected vehicles will give us long-term retention in sales and after sales, which will be much to our benefit. We are very confident that our business model will stand up to scrutiny. If we turn over and look at electrification, the pace of electrification is clearly quickening, and we clearly need to be at the forefront of that. And our market shares on electric vehicles and hybrids are excellent with all our manufacturers. And you can see here, there's been a 19% increase in terms of the share that electric and hybrid is taking in 2021 compared to 2020. There's a number of reasons for that. Clearly, the OEMs are fixated to make sure they don't have regulatory fines, which are massive. But also, the technological change is coming through. The range of electric vehicles is now much better. Range anxiety should be much reduced. So while there are still lots of impediments to wholesale adoption of electric vehicles, largely around infrastructure, actually, the cars are now coming through, and more and more people are able to drive them without impeding their daily life. Now, there's a number of points I think are important to make. One is actually electric vehicles need a lot more semiconductors than internal combustion vehicles. Well, people don't necessarily know that, but that's putting more and more pressure on these supply chains and production because they have to make electric vehicles for regulatory reasons, but it's absorbing a lot of chips. You can also see that hybrids are a significant part of the current picture of car sales. 34% of registrations, Jan to August, were actually hybrids. Now, this will reduce over time as electric vehicles improve and as more and more people see the 2030 deadline, though hybrids go after 2030 to a degree, you will see that change in electric vehicles come up. Interestingly, from an after-sales perspective, On the right-hand side, you can see that the SMMT forecast that by 2030, 73% of the UK vehicle park, about over 30 million cars, will be internal combustion engine, with hybrid a further 7%. So over 80% of the vehicle park will have an internal combustion component. And we're confident that that's, you know, that will provide a lot of resilience in our after-sales business for a lot of years to come. In addition, there's a growing body of research that shows that customer retention is actually higher in battery electric vehicles and hybrids than in traditional internal combustion engines, which is all good news for franchise retailers. And I am very confident that the connected car technology will also produce a retention benefit for after sales franchise dealers. So I think we are in a very good position. If we turn to colleagues, which are clearly pivotal to our execution, the labour market is in a very much changed position than pre-pandemic, and is not at all what we anticipated when we went into lockdown. To be honest, I was concerned we were going to have high levels of unemployment, and we clearly are not. We're in the UK now with record levels of vacancies. And actually, we've got approximately 500 vacancies at the moment, which has been going on since the end of the last lockdown, and I suspect we are not unique. So we have developed a plan to ensure that we have a sustainable, fully resourced team of colleagues and that they are highly trained, because there's a lot of change in our sector over the next 2 or 3 years, and we need people to be ready for that change. So we've had a plan and we're in the middle of implementing it. We've significantly augmented maternity pay. Colleagues now get 90% of their pay for 6 months. We are bringing more and more females into the workforce, particularly in the sales area. We are in the middle at the moment of a full-scale pay review of every job role in the group, which will be complete by the 1st of January. Our technicians review is fully complete and rolled out. And the reason for doing that is we want to make sure that we can secure through recruitment, that we can retain, and that our colleagues don't feel that they need to leave to get better pay somewhere else. So that is important for us in terms of sustainable business going forward. In addition, we've looked to the future and to make sure that we've got the right caliber of talent coming through and the right numbers coming through. So we've always had a very substantial light vehicle technician apprentice scheme, but we are launching on the 1st of January a modern apprentice scheme for service advisors. It's the first ever in-house design program, and we will be recruiting approximately 120 service advisor apprentices over and above current resource levels, with effect from the 1st of March for full rollout. When you actually add that package up, we estimate that approximately is an investment of around £12 million a year. Obviously, there's a lot of new roles in that. That's not entirely all pay. And that number excludes the impact of national insurance next year, which the Chancellor's kindly given us, which is circa another £2 million. Now, it's okay having colleagues, but you need to make sure they're motivated and trained. We have done a lot of work, including a strategic partnership with the Dale Carnegie Institute, to make sure that every single colleague in our group will have access to online personal development programs. And we will be significantly upweighting our line manager training and general manager training to oversee the pace of change that we expect in our business over the next 3 or 5 years. So let's move to current trading and outlook in September. September was a very strange month. You can see that every metric in terms of revenue and volumes is down. However, despite declining volumes, the group delivered a record profitable month. And this really shows, I think, the impact that oversupply of vehicles into the United Kingdom has historically had on decreasing margins in the sector. And the delta in margin is about 2%. In terms of gross profit margin from peak to trough, but actually 2% of a massive number. So it's a big impact in terms of profitability. Clearly, we're now at almost record margins. And we delivered a profit before tax in September of £20 million, which is clearly considerable. Revenues overall were stable, but bolstered certainly by acquisitions. And we've done a significant number of acquisitions in the past couple of years. Service revenues, unusually, actually, for our group, we're actually down like for like. And that was due to a number of reasons. Clearly, if you have lower vehicle sales, you've got less cars to prepare and to PDI. We had significant pent-up demand last September coming out of lockdown. So we've seen slightly muted, more muted demand, but not abnormal demand. in September. And we also had resource constraints around COVID and indeed vacancy levels. So service revenues were down, but actually profitability was strong. We again saw strong margin. If we turn to new vehicles, you can see the channels there of the four channels of new vehicles, and every channel was down. However, we outperformed in every single channel versus the SMMT registration numbers. And in some of those channels, quite significantly, we continue to gain market share in the fleet car channel, massive outperformance compared to the market, and also in commercial vehicles, which is a real sweet spot for the group. We have deep expertise in commercial vehicles, including our Vans Direct business. And we're very, very happy with that performance. We showed strong pricing disciplines in the face of supply constraints. If we turn to used cars, actually we were down on volume 7.4%, which probably isn't a great surprise given the supply constraints, though it did surprise me slightly. We were very firm in our pricing disciplines. Coming into September, and with all the uncertainty over the new car market, we really didn't know where our used vehicle supply levels were going to be for the very important used car months of October and through into Q4. So we made sure we maximized the margin that we made on the cars that we had, which clearly put us into a strong profitability standpoint. As it happened, our stock levels going into October are high. Actually, we've done well in terms of procurement, and that bodes well, I think, for Q4. But clearly, we saw volume down, margins up. Margins were significantly up pretty well across the board. It is worth pointing out that September was the last month of major rates relief in England. We've now hit the cap that the government have set, so we will not be able to have rates benefit going forward. However, we continue to gain rates benefit in Scotland where the rules aren't different. So the final slide, let's deal with outlook, which will bring a number of these issues together. The semiconductor supply chain issues, we do not think will resolve very quickly. We see them going well into 2022 from a new car perspective. And actually on used cars, we think that this deficit of supply will have an impact for quite a prolonged period. There is no sign of faltering demand at present, but clearly we've got to look at supply and demand. Our order banks for new vehicles are at historically high levels. We have an order bank, we just need the cars. We've clearly discussed the labour market changes, and we've hit these head on to make sure that we've got the right numbers of colleagues and that we're strong on retention and recruitment. And also we're bringing additional colleagues in to power the growth of the business going forward. While that's clearly got an investment cost, we think it'll put us in a good position in terms of generation of gross profit, generation of additional revenues, and an enhanced customer experience, which will stand us in good stead with regards to retention. The upshot then is the full year guidance is that profit before tax will not be less than £65 million, which clearly would be a record. If you take a wider view in terms of the strategic focus, we are a management team that is very focused on the job in hand to prepare the business for the future around a more normalised set of market conditions, greater scale coming from acquisitions to be executed, a dynamic environment of change around business models and technology. We will see continual change over the next 5 to 10 years, and we're preparing the business for that. And we got very exciting developments in digital, such as the launch of the Click to Drive brand and innovations around concierge personal shopping. In essence, we continue to focus our capacity for growth. We continue to make sure that our brands have high levels of customer awareness through marketing, that we've got the right number of colleagues, that we've got stable colleagues with the right skills, and that we've got acquisitions to execute. It is also true to say, as we put in the announcement, that compared to 6 months ago, we've got a more visible acquisition pipeline. Though, as Karen pointed out, we need to make sure we don't overpay and get carried away with the current earnings levels of the sector, because they will not continue forever. In essence, we feel confident, we have a plan, and we're going to attack it.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.